Take it from here. Don't go away when you can take it from here. Why don't you stay and maybe join in the fun? Now the show has begun.
Yes, Dick Bentley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes with June Whitfield, Wallace Eaton and the Keynotes, all inviting you to...
Ladies and gentlemen, all London is flocking to see a new musical called Gigi. It's set in Paris at the turn of the century. It's based on a famous novel. It's very French, and it's making a blooming fortune.
Yes. Now, Bentley and I have always worked on the principle that where the lolly lies, there loll I. So we wasted no time in finding another musical, also set in Paris at the turn of the century, also based on a famous novel, and also very French.
It's a musical version of Georges de Maurier's famous novel, Trilby. You know the one with Svengali.
Svengali. Yes. The curtain rises, you see, on this wonderful scene in the Latin Quarter of Paris in the year 1890. All the painters and writers are throwing a party for little Billy, a young English art student. There they are, all milling around and singing this song about the colourful part of Paris wherein they live.
Montmartre, let's dine a wine at Hippolyte, let's steal a kiss for Saffagatte. In Montmartre, Montmartre, who cares a fig for social strata? The biggest yacht persona grata in Montmartre. For here we paint, and here we write, and here we can be free. With song and love, and art and girls, and all service complete. Montmartre, the other districts may be smarter, collapses makes the fun grow harder. In Montmartre, Montmartre, M-O-N-T-M-A-R-T-R, Montmartre.
Oh, oh, my good friends, what gay and conventional fun we are having. Pierre, open another tin of health salts and let's have bubbly all round. Soon the girl I love will be here and then my joy will know no bounds. Her name is Trilby and she works in the laundry. What though the hot steam has taken the curl out of her hair? What though she smells always like the cloth of a boiled pudding? I love her. Where is she? Where is my gamine? Gamine?
Voici, little Billy. Voilà your laundry. Je regrette I am late, but Madame fell in the washing machine and became somewhat agitated.
What matters? You are here. Take this glass in your puffy red hand and bid farewell to wash day worries.
No, no, little Billy. I am disquieted. On my way here, there was an occurrence of the most strange. I had the feeling that someone was following me.
Oh, foolish little cabbage. That was your bustle.
Permit me to know otherwise. It was a strange bearded man with a beard. And at the top of his beard were his eyes. His eyes!
Dispel your fear, little Trilby. If he dares to appear here, I will fist fight him. I will thrash him within an inch of his... Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Ah! Good soir, mon ami. Well, continue, my brave one. You were saying that you would thrash me within an inch of my casque.
It is he, the bearded one of the following me. Who are you?
Yes, who are you?
Who am I? Hissed at and jeered, always hated and feared, I'm the weird with the beard, Svengali. Face full of hair and a sinister stare, mademoiselles should beware, Svengali. My hypnotic passes at girls of all classes don't come unstuck. Once they are caught, I just ferme la porte, and the best of luck. femme or jeune fille makes no difference to me. I can cope, cause je suis Svengali. My mystic power makes the lot of them cower. I'm that frightful old shower, Svengali. Ha ha!
Ah, so you are the master hypnotist. Depart from here, I warn you, I will belabor you with my clenched hand.
Ah, I do not leave here until I have possessed myself of that which I came here to acquire. This little laundress. I heard her sing at the washtubs this morning. On her last note, she reached E above high C.
Is this true, Trilby?
Yes, I caught my thumb in the mangle.
I will buy you another. For years I have had a dream. I would take a little cockney flower girl and make her into a duchess.
Eh? What would...
Oh, no, that's the other one, isn't it? Yeah. I mean to say, I would take a little Paris laundry girl and make her into an opera star through hypnotism.
Oh, no, do not let him. I want to stay with my little Billy. No one can make love like my little Billy can.
So, you resist me. Then I turn my eyes on you, so... Gaze deep into my eyes. Deep, not the whites, the yolks.
I gaze. I am powerless.
I will turn you into an opera star like Maria Callas or Joan Hammond or Harry Secombe.
Your wish is my command, O master.
Hello, she's gone into Aladdin now. All right, put on your beret and follow me.
I come. Goodbye, little Billy.
Goodbye, Trilby. I'll not forget you.
Bye-bye, Trilby. Whatever will be, Trilby, still be my love. Though it's goodbye, toodaloo, au revoir, adieu. I'll be true to you, if you'll be true to je. Farewell, Trilly. Remember, little Billy, when you're the toast of the town. Though you'll be gone for the nonce of who, I'll still be pensing, cause my sweetheart isn't dead. My Trilby's just gone on ahead.
This, by the way, is Gigi, not the horse's mouth. Well, that's roughly the first act. Then we lock the doors and have the interval, which is where we reckon to make most of the money.
The next act takes place in the Covent Garden Opera House, where Svengali has booked Trilby to sing the character of D. Rose in the famous opera D. Rose and Cavalier. She is sitting in her dressing room before the opening looking very sad.
Trilby, why do you look very sad? Tonight, under my hypnotic influence, a new star will be born. All London will be at your feet.
I know, but my art is sad.
What matters if the art be sad, if the feet be happy? I know you're still thinking of Montmartre, n'est-ce pas?
Yes, Montmartre. I cannot remove it from my heart. You see, I dream of lovely Bohème. Sweet memories bloom of lovely Bohème. The fragrant charm of lovely Bohème. My heart beats time to lovely Bohème. And when the lover's moon shines on the Bois de Boulogne, the trees will sigh, please don't cry, say lullaby. Oh, won't you come back to la vie bohème? No more to run.
roam from La Vie.
Yes, won't you come back to La Vie Bohème?
No more to roam from La Vie,
La Vie
Bohème.
Foolish girl.
10 minutes, please, Mr. Robbie.
You hear that? The unicyclist is on his closing trick. Your public is waiting. Let me apply the fluence. Look into my eyes. Trilby. Trilby, you will sing tonight as you have never sung before. Baritone. You hear, Trilby? Do you hear?
Hi.
You're not gazing. Hi. Gaze harder. My eyes. Look in the old eggs. The eggs. Watch them. You will sing.
No, no, it is not working.
Not working, but I have never failed. Sacré nom de Jean Sablon. Why does it fail now?
Because love is too powerful, and I am parted from my love.
Who is that? Look out there. There's someone looking through the dressing room window. Who is it?
Hello, Trilby. I'm on the window sill, be kind, and ouvre la fenêtre.
Oh, it is little Billy. But how did you get here?
I swam the channel.
But you cannot swim.
I had Svengali's help.
Svengali, you hypnotized him to swim the channel?
That was the only way to get you to sing. So go out there now, Trilby. I promise you that the audience will rise to their feet and cheer.
How can you be sure?
Because I've hypnotized them as well.
Darling Svengali, everybody gather around me. Unicyclists, opera singers, painters, dancers. Let's tell the world that of all the isms, hypnotism is best.
There's no ism like hypnotism if you want to progress. There's no ism like hypnotism against that old sweet smell of success.
Journalism can help you.
Paternalism can too.
Even Arianism.
Antiquarianism.
And anti-disestablishment Arianism. But there's no ism like hypnotism. No one need be a flop. There's no ism like hypnotism, cause it takes you right to the top.
There's rationalism and criticism.
And nationalism and witticism.
Materialism, imperialism.
Asceticism, athleticism.
Congregationalism, denominationalism.
And don't forget educationalism.
And royalism and loyalism.
And soliloquism.
Ventriloquism.
Exoticism.
Eroticism.
But what is it better than loticism? There's no ism like hypnotism. Come on, give it a chance. There's no ism like hypnotism, so let's go into a trance.
Défense de cracher.
Let's go into a trance.
Just watch my eyeballs.
Let's go into a trance.
With old Svengali.
Let's go, two, three, four, into a trance.
Gentlemen, please, come along now, gents. Time to go home for your lunch.
Here, come on, Mr. Glum. Why are you sitting there looking so disconsolate?
Because, Ted, I have no reason to look consolate.
Eh?
Do you know where my Ron is at the moment, my baby boy?
No.
He's up at St. Thomas's, stretched out on the operating table.
Oh, no, Mr. Glum, why?
Well, Ted, pour me another brown and I'll tell you. The start of it began, well... It'd be yesterday, just around tea time. Ron and Eth were in my front room on, as might be expected, about their forthcoming wedlock.
Oh, Ron. My
My heart's really beginning to pound now. Only another fortnight, and then we two shall be one. Don't you feel all shivery, Ron?
No, eh?
Why not, beloved?
Dad says I've been one all my life.
Not one in that sense, Ron. We become indivisible. Know what I mean, beloved?
Yes, Seth, I saw it on television. The indivisible man. He had a blank where his head should be.
Ron, I could make a remark. But I won't. Not after what we bought this morning. My wedding ring. I don't think I've ever been so thrilled as when we walked out of the shop with that little bulgy box tucked safely in your cardigan pocket. Was it very expensive, Ron?
Oh, I don't know, Eth. Mum knitted it.
Not the cardigan, Ron.
No.
My wedding ring.
Oh.
Oh, Ron, do you think I could have another quick look at the ring again? Or is there some superstition about that?
Oh, I don't know, Eth.
I know there's something a bride's not supposed to do before the wedding, Ron. Oh, well, I don't care. I must have another look. Is the ring somewhere handy?
Yes, Eth, you'll pass it on your way home.
Pass it on my way home?
You can't miss it, Eth. It's in between a camera and a pair of false teeth.
Pawn shop? How did it get there?
Well, Eth, when I brought it home yesterday, Dad was on the doorstep. He said, "Hello, my baby boy. What's the bulge in your cardigan pocket?"
He didn't even give you time to get it in the house. Mr. Clum! Mr. Clum!
It just gone out. Hello, hello, hello. Oh, Eth, how pretty you look with that nice high colour in your cheeks. Must say purple suits you. Oh, Ron, she gets lovelier every day, doesn't she?
Yes, Dad.
What a lucky boy you are. She's the one they should have chosen to model for that Italian painter. You know, that An Agony. You know why? Because she's got that quality of repose. You can see immediately, there's a girl who won't jump to conclusions. There's a girl who'll let a man explain. There's a girl who'll give him a chance to think.
Mr. Glum? No.
No?
No.
Oh, well, I tried. All right, Ron, stand by for the blast off.
To take a girl's wedding ring and pawn it before she's even put it on a... Oh, Mr. Glum, it's nothing short of... Oh, I'm sorry. I just can't think of a word that's bad enough.
How about bloomers?
Well, if I suppose I can say that I sense an undertone of reproof in your voice. I admit I have slightly pawned your ring, but I mean, that's only half the story.
What else have you pawned?
Nothing else. That money what I obtained by the pledging of Eth Bauble was not just for the purpose of spending on myself. Every penny was devoted to elderly and sick animals.
Why?
Because I didn't know they were elderly and sick when I backed them. Well, I'm very pleased to say that luckily I had a 10-bob saver on a 40-to-1 outsider and that got me out of trouble.
And that makes everything all right, I suppose.
Yeah.
Pawning a girl's wedding ring to wager a gamble.
Oh, you have got a bit of tongue, haven't you? The object of the investment was to make extra money... for me to help pay for you and Ron to have 10 glorious days honeymoon at Grimsby.
All right, Mr. Glum. I'll accept that your motives were in the right place.
Well, thank you.
But I want my wedding ring back.
All right, all right. You'll have it back, Ed. You'll have it back and more. There's a dog in Trap 3 at Catford tomorrow, which I'm assured by confident
people... No, Mr. Glum. I want it back now.
Ah.
Come on, Mr. Glum. We're going straight to that pawn shop right away.
Yeah,
There we are, Mr. Glum. Oh. One gold wedding ring, ticket 743, taken out of place.
Very good.
Just let me enter it in the register. How about Mrs. Glum's teeth? They still to remain?
Well, just for a few days, Mr. Willett. We don't have our joint till the weekend, you see. Here you are, Eph. One ring returned with thanks.
Well, I should think so, too.
You're not mollified yet, are you, Eph? You're still nettled, aren't you? All right, as we're in the pawn shop, give me a chance to redeem myself.
What do you mean?
Mr. Willett, pass over that other tray of rings. Yes, thank you, Tom. Here you are, Eph. You and Ron pick out some little trinket as a peace offering.
Oh, Mr. Glam, that's not necessary.
No, don't kick a gift horse in the teeth, Eph. Go on, pick something. Price no object, long as it's under 30 bob. Now, do you see anything you like?
I like this, Eph.
Yes, that is nice. That's an eternity ring.
Oh, I didn't know you got a ring for that.
Eternity, Ron.
Oh.
I must say, it's really very nice. What does it come out at?
Well, now, to you, £85.
I should, Coco. It don't come out at all. Ron, put it back before you drop it.
Yeah, but I assure you that's a genuine diamond. Why don't you just try it on, eh?
Oh, well, I suppose there's no harm just seeing how it looks, eh, Ron?
I suppose not, Eph. There, do you like it?
Ron, he meant me try it on.
Take it off, Ron, and put it back. Concentrate on the cheap end of the tray. Now, look here, this is nice, this brooch. It's very chic. I must say, what appeals to me most about it is what it says here.
What's that?
3 and 11. All right, Mr. Willett, madam will have that.
Here's
the money, and with my thanks for your assistance, I give you good day.
Yeah, good
day. Dad, we can't go yet.
I'm not buying nothing for you, Ron.
But, Dad...
Now, don't start about it. It isn't fair. I'll get you a cakey at the baker's on the way home.
But that isn't what's worrying me, Dad. It's that £85 diamond ring.
Well, what about it?
I can't get it off me finger.
Hold still, Ron, will you? Will you hold still, Ron? For heaven's sake, cooperate with me. Don't keep flinching like that. I'm just trying to warm up the ring so it'll expand and slip off.
Mr. Glum, you'll never do it with a blow lamp.
Look, Eth, in that pawn shop we tried every other kind of tool we could find for over 3 hours. Now that Mr. Willett's been kind enough to come home here with us...
Yes, not a question of kindness, Mr. Glum. That's a valuable ring. I'm not parting from it without payment.
Now, look, suppose we clamp the ring into a vise and then drive his finger out with a mallet.
Mr. Glum, Ron's dear finger is already raw. From when you tried to sandpaper it smaller.
Look, Mr. Glum, you've already made the joint so swole up, the ring won't come off till the swelling's unswollen.
Then what do I do?
Dad, I thought of something.
Well?
I never got my cakey from the baker shop.
Serves you right. As from this afternoon, you forfeited all rights to a cakey forever.
Oh, Dad.
There, Ron. Mr. Glum, we're all overtired.
I suppose we are.
Yes, I think so. I suggest that Ron goes to bed right now, and perhaps the night's sleep will decrease his finger to its normal size. And then in the morning, we can slip the ring off and take it round to Mr. Willett.
No. With all due respect, I'm staying where the ring is. No reflection, but I'm staying.
Oh, you miserable old... Well, you won't enjoy it. All right, you can have the sofa bed, Mr. Willett. Eph, you take the spare room.
Oh,
Ron, you get right up to bed. Go on.
Righto, Dad. Good night, Eph.
Good night, Ron.
Good night, Dad.
Good night.
Dad.
Oh, all right. Good night, Ron.
Good night, Dad. Good night, Mr. Willett.
Not him, Ron. Not him. Only family.
Oh.
Now go on, get up to bed.
Oh,
Mr. Glum, what that boy of yours lends you in for?
You never spoke a truer word, Tim. No need to tell you, mate, that none of us had much sleep that night. Except Ron, of course.
Yeah.
When we assembled at his bedside at 7 o'clock the next morning, he was snoring like a buzzsaw. All right, Ron, come on, wakey-wakey.
Beloved, wake up.
Hey, what? Hello, Ed. What are you doing here?
The diamond ring, dear heart.
What diamond ring?
It's always the same. He starts every day from scratch. It'll be 11 o'clock before he remembers that there was a yesterday. Ron, give us your left hand.
Left hand?
The one both your gloves fit.
Oh, I see. Here you are.
Right, now then, let's get the... Hey, it's gone.
What?
The ring, it's not on his finger.
It must have slipped off in the night.
It must be in the bedclothes somewhere.
Out of bed, Ron.
Yes. Oh.
Mr. Glum, there's no need to shove him like that.
It's all right, Ed. He don't feel nothing till after breakfast.
He bruised.
Now, let's have a look round in the bedclothes.
Yes, can you see anything?
Wait a minute. There's a pencil sharpener here. There's a roller skate. Half a bar of fruit and nut. Hey, what's this? Oh, no, it's the egg cup what he uses for his painting water. Well, I'm right down at the foot now.
Oh, then it's not here.
And it's not under the bed, because I've looked.
Well, obviously, he must have taken it off during the night and put it somewhere. Did you, Ron? Ron, I'm talking to you.
Oh, dear.
Would you, Adam and Eve, look at him.
Oh, it seems a shame to... Mr. Glum.
What?
Does he always sleep like that?
Like what?
With his finger in his mouth.
Yes, ever since he was about... Cool, dummy, I see what you mean.
Stone me, Mr. Glum. That boy ain't gone and swallowed an 85 quid diamond ring.
In the night, Teddy did it, yes. F and Mr. Willett have got him up at the hospital now, having X-ray photographs taken of his abominable tract.
And as soon as they find the ring, they operate, eh?
Yes, and of course, extraction of a diamond ring is not the sort of operation you can have under the National Health.
No.
It's going to cost me every penny what I want on that outsider.
Hello, Dad.
Ron, what are you doing here?
Oh, Mr. Glum.
The death.
Oh, Mr. Glum, great news. They X-rayed Ron all over, and they spotted the ring. Guess where they saw it?
Well.
My toe.
Your toe? Blimey, your elementary canal goes a bit far south, doesn't it?
Oh, Mr. Glum, it was on his toe.
Oh, on it?
Yes, he didn't swallow it. It must have come off his finger while he was asleep, rolled down the bed, and he put his toe through it.
The middle toe, Dad. The piggy that had roast beef.
Well. Trust my baby, Ron, to put his foot in it. So I don't have to fork out my winnings after all.
No, Mr. Glum. So will you make up with Ron now?
Make up with him? Ron, come with me.
Where are we going?
We're going to buy the biggest flaky cakey in the bakery.
Harry Rabinowitz and the BBC Review Orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved were Dick Bentley, Professor Jimmy Edwards and June Whitfield, encouraged by Wallace Eaton and the Keynotes. Frank Muir and Dennis Norton wrote the script, and the program was produced by Charles Maxwell. We all invite you to tune in again next week and...
Take it from here.